Hey everyone, thanks for tuning in to another episode of Captain Hunter's podcast. Once again, I just want to thank you all for taking the ride with me and with us as we try to learn the best methods in order for the community and the police officers to come together and see eye to eye. This is going to be a real short episode this week, or this particular episode is going to be very short because I have some other things to do, and I really just kind of wanted to focus on some situations that are going on around the country and take a look at what's going on with the relationship with the police and the public. And really just wanted to kind of discuss some current events and see how we can understand how these events are affecting the morale, the relationship of the community and the police. So we just want to take a look at that. Let me just pause briefly just for a couple of moments here. We want to give some attention to National Police Week, which is coming up May 15th for police officers, National Law Enforcement Week, time when we come together and appreciate all that law enforcement is doing and for the community and try to focus on the positive that's going on. Also, let me just give a shout out to National Corrections Officer Week, May 5th through the 11th. And focus on some attention onto what they do. Both of these types of jobs are taken by these people, are entered into by a particular brand of people who are dedicated to helping their communities get better. Police officers go out there and put their lives on the line to arrest criminals, to find them and apprehend them. Corrections officers also take their lives on the line and how to house and watch over and guard the very worst of the worst. And those who have been deemed to be not fit for the public for whatever amount of time that may be. Shout outs to both police officers and to correctional officers. Also to both of these organizations, both of these professions. And let me just say that if you have any promotional opportunities coming up, make sure you give me a call, hunterpolicetraining.com, hunterpolicetraining.com. Visit my website, look at my blogs, check them out. I got some more stuff and more contents coming out. Also, I started a YouTube channel, Captain L. Hunter. You can find me on Twitter. And I'm also on Instagram, going to be posting some live events and just kind of commenting about what's going on with the police world. So I actually had thought about doing this particular episode through Facebook and through the Instagram, a short little video, but I thought it was going to be a little too long for that. So I decided to make it a podcast instead. So I just really want to focus on this week in law enforcement. And I think that this week really exemplifies what's wrong with law enforcement and why there's such a disconnect between law enforcement and the community. And I really want to hone in on these particular type of events and what's going on in particular this week. So let's get started and let's take a look at what's going on in law enforcement this week. And this is, once again, this episode is going to be geared towards mostly just current events and taking an in-depth look and gaining an understanding as to what's going on with law enforcement, why these things are happening, and what we can do to make them better. I mean, listen, it makes no sense to me and does no good to always be complaining about what's going on and never really taking any kind of steps and methodologies to fix the problems. We can complain about these things all day, all night. We know that law enforcement has been in enmity with the community. I've discussed these things at length numerous times before. I've talked about how there's been a prejudicial type of mindset against Black communities, the gay community, and various other communities throughout the country. I talked about books we can read about understanding where these things can come from. Our Enemies in Blues, you guys really should check that out. Our Enemies in Blue by Christian Williams, you really should check that out. Our Enemies in Blue, Police and Power in America. Also, Bradley Relko's book, I believe, is The Rise of the Warrior Cop, Bradley Belko. Read that book. Really, really good information in there. And listen, guys, you just read anything and everything that you can. Really, when I've talked about police officers and their enmity with the community, what I'm really talking about is a perception problem. Now, this perception problem persists because there has been moments in time in American history where there has been an enmity between the police and law enforcement that has been sanctioned and offered by the state, sanctioned, justified by the state. And when I say state, I mean all levels of state, local, federal government, right? The government encouraged this type of enmity, and it was meant and designed for political and social reasons in order to keep one group of people in political power and keep one people out of political power, out of social power, out of academic power, and so on and so on. And so now that there has been a coming together, and now that there has been a rise of the social, economic, academic, and political power of the once-time disenfranchised people, there seems to be some type of relentless backlash to that. That's what we want to talk about and focus on today. So let's just focus on it today. This week, this in pouring through the records of this week, once again, let me just say that this is National Police Week, National Police Month. Coming up in the month of May, where we give reverence and observance to those who have fallen in combat, the Memorial Day, and those who serve our communities and try to do the right thing as far as law enforcement and those who have fallen in law enforcement. So we want to say thank you to them that are alive, and thank you, a moment of reverence and respect to those who have given the ultimate sacrifice, both on the battlefield and the legal field as far as law enforcement. We want to recognize those people who have done that. But when we understand that there are certain situations that come up that persist in the public perception problem that police officers have, and we really want to hone in on these things and really want law enforcement to do something about it. We can't continue just to look at these things and analyze these things and never make any kind of progress towards going through the future. And so that's what I want this podcast to really be about and focusing on, is coming to these resolutions and solutions in order that we can bring about healing and mending offenses and all that kind of stuff between the public and the community. So let's just take a look at that. So as I'm going through the news reels for this week, I'm looking at something that happened in Jersey. So the New Jersey Attorney General's office has been investigating uses of force and their use of force, the inadequacy, I should say, of their use of force collecting system by the state. All the cities and towns in New Jersey are required to submit their use of forces, which were completed by the police. Use of force is a report anytime an officer uses force, mace, taser, takedown, destabilization, firearms, any type of canines, any type of use of force other than the mere taking into custody. At least that's how it was written for our particular agency. So anytime any officer uses any type of force, the state of New Jersey had required or was requiring officers to submit reports. Those reports to go through the chain of command, and then the chain of command of the local police administration should have sent information to the state so they can gather the information and do their statistical analysis and see if there's any type of propensity for problems within an agency, number one, and in particular, and for a particular officer, number two. I'm reading from NewJersey.com. You can go to this. This was published in May of 2019. And this particular report, and all these reports are online, and this is just for anyone. So this is, of course, we're talking about New Jersey, but this is a problem that we can see that paints a broad brush upon all police officers and all police agencies, and even some state agencies, state higher up agencies, in which, you know, if we're looking for transparency and reform and all these kind of other kind of things, then this is the problem, then this is what happens. Now, kudos to the state of New Jersey and for their Attorney General for doing something about this. But it's a feel-good story at one point, and on the other hand, if someone's reading this and they're saying, and all they're seeing is cover-up. So it depends on how you look at the police and how you analyze this particular data and in this particular article that you may read. Authorities are investigating, once again from NewJersey.com, NJ.com, authorities are investigating multiple New Jersey police officers who reported using high rates of physical force against suspects following NJ.com's release of a statewide database of police use of force, according to state's top law enforcement official. Attorney General Gubar Grewal on Monday acknowledged that his Office of the Public Integrity and Accountability had launched the probes after obtaining the data set that formed the force report, an NJ Advanced Media investigation published last year. So this has been going on for a while. So let's just take a look and see this. The force report, a 16-month investigation, found major disparities in how police officers use force and who they use it against, as well as paltry oversight and no standard reporting practices. The database included every report instance of use of force between 2012 and 2016 turned over by police departments in response to hundreds of Open Public Records Act requests. Open Public Records Act requests. So numerous reports, numerous FOIs, Freedom of Information, numerous requests for information were sent for the use of force for the state of New Jersey. And that information was gathered between 2012 and 2016. As a result of the use of force, they identified individual officers in particular, and they also indicated several police departments who needed some type of reform. As I read before, they said they had found numerous disparities in how police officers used force, number one, and who they used it against. And this article contains links. People click on the links and they can figure out and find out and listen to and read about what these disparities are. The Attorney General said the series highlighted serious issues, and this is serious issues is in quotations, including widespread racial disparities and departments and individual officers that use high rates of force during arrest. but he stressed that the data also showed the overwhelming majority of police officers reported using force at or below the average rate. So this is actually a good story. So many times when people have this animus towards police officers, they're only looking at the headlines like this, and they're only seeing the attempts at cover-ups, bad statistical record-keeping, you know, requests by hundreds of use of force requests by these different agencies in order to get information. And all they see is cover-up. All they see is police officers using force. But the attorney general, who is vowing to do something about this particular form of aggression and lack of statistical record-keeping and all that kind of stuff, is also saying that he found numerous police officers, and the overwhelming majority of police officers, are using force at or below the average. So that is also a good story. Of all of the cases, all of the instances in which use of force is being used, the majority of the time it is at or below the average. We should take some gratitude, some sigh of relief in knowing that police officers, number one, in their everyday interactions with people, are not using force, right? The vast majority of the time, let me say it again, the vast majority of the time, police officers are not using force. And even when they find that they are using force, the overwhelming majority of the time, they're using force at or below the statistical average for all police officers. So that is good. Number one, they're not using force at all that much. Number two, when they are using force, the vast majority of the time, it is below the average. And third, they are doing something about those departments and those individual officers, which they are finding that they're using force well and beyond. Continuing with what the AG from New Jersey said, what gets lost in this is the vast majority of police interactions go off without a hitch, Greenwald said. It is a rare instance where force is used. It's even more rare when that force is used without justification. Shortly after the investigation was published, Greenwald and other New Jersey law enforcement leaders pledged to overhaul the state's how the state tracks and monitors police use of force. There's another statement. His comments on Monday were first public acknowledged that state authorities were investigating specific law enforcement officers. The AG continues to say, if their conduct is criminal, we'll hold them accountable criminally. He said, if their conduct could be fixed with retraining, we'll do it that way. So they're doing something about it. So they're going to fix this, their state recording system. And those particular officers, who are they going to take a look at? If they need to be punished criminally, then he's going to do it. If it's just simply a lack of training, then they will do that. So something's being done about it. But I just want to say that, you know, as far as the police officer accountability, police officer transparency, and police officer perception problem, here's a perception problem. We have to fix this perception problem. Now, this is from the state of New Jersey, just something I come across. But if I come across it, then other people may come across it as well. If you live in the state of New Jersey, or if you're a member of a particular community, then you may look at this article and say, oh, man, you know, the police are not keeping records. They're hiding stuff. And we got to submit hundreds of documentation in order to get some information. They're always covering stuff up and this, that, and the other. And listen, I agree that it looks bad. And hundreds of requests by these different watchdog agencies to not have to be submitted in order for information to be released. And so I think that if the police officers, if management, if city and town leaders, police administrators want to do something about their perception problem, then this is one of the first things they have to fix, is the transparency problem. If a watchdog agency asks for something, they shouldn't have to beg for it 2, 3, 4, 5 and hundreds of times. I think that's ridiculous. Number two, I think that they ought to have better statistical record keeping measures. And then let me just pause right there and say, I think it's a shame that these things have to be done. It's a shame that all these measurements have to be done because of how police officers have acted throughout the years. You know, all these different rules and laws and sets of regulations that we have are really the result of people behaving badly. Right. If we really stop and think about it, any agency or any profession that you work at, live at, whatever. And there's some rule about it, right? If you live in homeowners association, if you live in some HOA, some homeowners association, and you have a rule that says you have to pick up after your dog poops on the grass, well, that's because people weren't picking up and people just leaving things in the trash. So all of these, just about every rule and regulation is because somebody somewhere along the line has messed up. And so police officers have messed up in some of their line of work and line of reasoning and thinking, and therefore some dedication has to be done in order to right the wrong and fix the problem and ensure that other people don't have that problem down the line. And I think, let me just also continue with this pause and say that the problem, I think, with a lot of law enforcement agencies, as I was reading this and really giving a lot of thought to this problem of our perception, the problem of why officers do what they do, is what I talked about in another podcast that I'm going to be releasing But I talked about the Stanford Prison Experiment. And as the Stanford Prison Experiment, it was an experiment in which college students from Stanford University were divided into half. There was about 20 students. I don't remember the exact number offhand, but about 20, let's just say 20 students. And 10 of those students were chosen to be corrections officers, and the other 10 were chosen to be prisoners. The whole experience of being arrested and processed and placed into prison cells was completed. Half of the prisoners were arrested on campus, brought to a building that was set up in order to emulate a prison detention center. The problem began to arise. Now, this is an experiment, collegiate experiment with college kids, right? College kids who are upstanding, presumably citizens, going to a major university in the United States. Obviously, no problems, hopefully no mental issues in criminal histories and all that kind of stuff. So normal, upstanding, good citizens chosen to be members of this experiment. The problem comes in, and we see this problem, this experiment start to take shape, and that we see the students who were chosen to be prison guards begin to take on these personality traits and begin to abuse their authority, right? They even got to wear the mirrored glasses, so they were given nightsticks, and they were given the authority to create any type of situation to bring compliance up to the prisoners. So they were able to take away their mattresses. They gave them buckets or refused to empty buckets in order for them to use the bathroom. And so they came up with all these kind of creative type of ways, and they saw that their power dynamic begin to change. And so when I taught human behavior, the police academy to recruits coming in, I always talked about this particular experiment. I talked about the authority that they have, and that they can see people change, not only for themselves and those who they are supervising and those who they are guarding and housing in their prisons and those whose bodies they have control over. But they will sometimes even see their own personalities change. And I warn them against this because I think that is a very dangerous thing. And as I talk about the Stanford Prison Experiment, I also think about another article that I came across in which it talks about power causes brain damage and how leaders lose mental capacities, most notably for reading other people, that were essential to their rise. This is from an article that was written in the Atlantic, the business section, by Jerry Usin. A very good article. Talks about power being an intoxicating drug. Now, there's a debate amongst this article and amongst this psychological community, social science community, whether there is any merit to this. The question is, does power drive people mad, or are people mad because they have power, or is the power that they're given driving them mad? And so this article attempts to say that CEOs of different corporations, politicians, what have you, are driven mad with power. Some other have debate and said that, well, they are already mad, and I'm using mad in quotations, mad with power, and therefore they seek these particular avenues of employment. You have this power addiction, therefore you become a politician. You have this power addiction, therefore you become a CEO. Or the question is, in your time and tenure as a CEO, do you become that way? And so I think that conflating that with the Stanford prison experiment, we can see that these normal students supposedly got this power and began to behave in a different manner. So I think that is a little bit of evidence that says power can make people mad. But you guys can read over that. That's in the Atlantic 2017 article, Power Causes Brain Damage. Now, there is another article refuting that, but you guys can read that on your own. So you guys can do a little bit of research on that on your own. Once again, bringing this back to law enforcement, I always address that, and I always thought it was very good to get this out in the open and say, listen, don't become a victim of this. Remain grounded, remain level-headed. Don't let this power that you have, don't let this a badge that you have in your chest and this sidearm that you have drive you mad and drive you crazy. Historically, I think that a good case can be made that this is what happened to police officers. They were given this power and this authority over people's lives. And when somebody disrespects their authority, right? If you respect my authority, when somebody disrespects their authority, they want to arrest them for contempt of cop and all this kind of crazy stuff. It's very important that people understand that. And listen, I'm trying to give some light and shed some light on this so we can all understand how we can make things better. That's just one story that I read from NewJersey.com. So let's move on to another incident that I think is very negative in as far as what's going on in this particular week as far as law enforcement. And we talk about the incident in Chicago in which the Fraternal Order of Police, the police union in Chicago, is outside picketing and protesting and wanting the attorney, Kim Fox, to step down as the state's attorney there. because of her handling of the Jussie Smollett case. I mean, they just won't let this down. So there's protests outside Attorney General's office there, the prosecutor's office there. It's led by the Fraternal Order of Police. And of course, there's counter-protesters there. And then, of course, then the racist group shows up. The Proud Boys shows up. They showed up back in April. There's been a number of protests. Obviously, they had some back in April. Some are still going on now. People are getting arrested, all because they want the state's attorney to step down over handling on the Jussie Smollett case. They don't feel as if this attorney general has their back. She's now at enmity with the Chicago Police Department all over this Smollett case. And I would assume over other cases in which she has refused to prosecute people. So this is coming to a head, all once again bringing a bad light upon law enforcement, and that law enforcement wants their state's attorney to step down. I think it's really, really disappointing to see all this going on. Let me just read a little bit from the Chicago Tribune article. It says, chant of 16 shots in the cover-up. A reference to the fatal police shooting of Laquan McDonald spread through the crowd as protesters crossed Ogden and walked toward the union headquarters at Washington Boulevard, where officers were stationed with bikes. Protesters moved in the streets, filling the gap between the law enforcement and Chicago police officers. A small group was wearing red shirts from a chain singing, FOP is racist, we shall not be moved. Right, the FOP being the Fraternal Order of Police, and they shall not be moved. So I think that this is really, really a problem and really a disappointment that these protesters are arguing that the FOP is racist and they're standing behind all this kind of stuff. I addressed all this in Chicago's problems with their consent decree and how the FOP there, their union there, is not behind the consent decree. And it's really, really just a bad situation. And now they have this clash they got going on with their state's attorney there, Kim Fox, and they want her to step down. And I hope that she doesn't step anywhere. Stand strong and do what you have to do. Really, really, really disappointing and should be seen that way. And really, really terrible that that's going on. We'll keep an eye on that and see what's going on with that. And so finally, let me bring this to a close. And with the Sandra Bland situation, yes, it's rearing its ugly head again. This is the week of May 5th. So now, after all this time, we have seen that she, 39-second cell phone video that she began to record. Now, truth be told, there's nothing really damaging in that particular cell phone video that we just saw for the first time. Now, we understand that the officer there in Senior resigned, said he would never work in law enforcement. That's why the charges of him lying on his report was ultimately dismissed. So he's never going to work in law enforcement again. Sandra Bland, unfortunately, is still dead. Looks like and seems to be a suicide. I do have a question about the suicide. I think it's very suspicious that this garbage bag was inside the cell. I don't understand that. And I've worked, obviously, in law enforcement, been in charge of that. So I don't understand that. Don't understand the trash can being there. But, I mean, every place has different policies and all that kind of stuff. But I don't understand that. I think that was very silly. I am curious, one thing I've never read about, and I'm very curious to see this, the actual footage of Ms. Bland entering the cell of her hanging herself. Now, they may never show that to the public, which for obvious reasons, but they do have video of her being placed in the cell. If you have video of her being placed in that cell, how is it there is no mention? I have not seen any mention in any news reports. If somebody can correct me about this, please point me to the news article that reports this, that they show where she tied the bag from the can, the trash bag from the trash can around her neck and then slumped down and killed herself. I've not seen that. And listen, I've been in investigations in which someone killed themselves under my watch as a lieutenant, so I understand how the process works. But I am curious about that. We had not seen that. And once again, they probably wouldn't release it, but at least I think they ought to talk about it. Read the autopsy report. It does look like it's a suicide and so what have you. So that my point of bringing up her cell phone video is the fact that it looks like there was some information that was kept back from the family and their attorney. Now, the state of Texas has said that they have turned over the video, and this video that's being released right now is old news, and the family had it all along. Why it's coming to the surface at this point, they don't know. One side of the story is saying, listen, we never had it, and it took an investigative team to gather and garner this cell phone video. The state is saying, well, we gave it to you guys all along. This is just another hoax and plan to play upon the sympathies to try to get this investigation open because you didn't like the results of it. We'll keep an eye on that and see what happens with that. As far as law enforcement, it does show that the officer, well, I mean, it's nothing new. So I can't say it showed the officer in bad light. The officer was in bad light. We've seen how he instigated this situation. Unfortunately, he's not going to be in law enforcement anymore. He did lie in his report, and I don't really have a problem with him, with the charges being dropped, as long as he doesn't work in law enforcement anymore. The only problem I would say that there is a problem with is that it does not encourage other people from not, other officers specifically, from not lying on their reports. I think you have to stop officers from behaving badly, and the best way to do that is through punishment, in which everybody sees that there is a consequence for that. Speaking of consequences, as I'm reading through these articles, I understand and come to understand two of the officers or two of the former deputies who were working in the cell block that day no longer work for that particular agency. They are now police officers in that town. News10.com, 2016. The article reads, two jailers moved into policing jobs after Sandra Bland's death. Less than 2 months after the death of Sandra Bland, a black woman who was jailed in a routine traffic stop, Rafael Zuniga and Michael Sergas left the Waller County Sheriff's Office in 2015 for the Waller Police Department, a smaller agency with lesser police officers, according to state records. They started work the same day. This is the perception problem that police officers have. This is what we have. You know, we're going from agency to agency. Bad conduct is not punished. You perform negatively in one job, you leave that job, and then you go work for some other agency and you get a job. It's just absolutely nuts. This is what happened in East Pittsburgh. It almost happened with the shooting of Tamir Rice, with that officer who shot Tamir Rice, the 12-year-old, left Cleveland Police Department, was going to go to a smaller police department. But thanks to public pressure that was put upon him, he then withdrew his application and refused to take the job. But this is terrible. This is terrible, and this has to stop. In the state of Connecticut, if you have any type of disciplinary action that is pending against you and you resign, you cannot go to another police department. That was a law that was passed fairly recently, and I think that's a good law. Other states need to adopt this law. You can't just be accused of assault and battery and shooting people and neglect to do your job and lying on the reports and everything like that. And then you have this internal affairs investigation going on against you, resign from that particular post and then go work somewhere else and then shoot someone 4 hours after you start your shift. It's just absolutely insane. Continuing with this article from News 10, they have kept those jobs even after admitting under oath their roles in falsifying a jail monitoring law that indicated guards checked on Bland an hour before she was found hanging in her cell in July 2015. According to an attorney for the Bland family, which has filed a wrongful death suit against the county and several employees, including the two former jailers, local authorities view Bland's death a suicide. So these two people who falsified records quit their jobs and got another job with the police department the same day. I mean, this is crazy, crazy. Attorney Tom Rhodes told the AP this week that Zuniga acknowledged in a deposition that the log was filled out in advance with time that he supposedly conducted cell checks. So he just went to work probably and just, okay, I'm going to do a cell block check at 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock. and just filled them out before he actually did the checks. Sergas acknowledged that he signed the bottom of the log sheet at the beginning of the shift before any actual checks, according to Rhodes, who described his depositions but did not provide transcripts to the AP. So this is what's going on. So when we talk about our perception problem, here's our perception problem, right? We have officers being lying, falsifying records, quitting those jobs, getting jobs in other places. We got the fraternal order police in Chicago fighting with their state attorney because they don't like how one case was handled. Meanwhile, the Chicago Police Department has in a 5-year span lost $700 million, paid out $700 million, caused the city of Chicago to pay out $700 million to families because of their excessive abuses against their public, and they want to fight against a Smollett case. This is just silly, and I'm sure that there's other cases that they're probably not really going into depth about, but they probably just have no faith in the prosecutor's willingness to prosecute crimes or hold people responsible. So I'm sure that there's a lot of other things that are underneath the surface that are going on there in Chicago, but it's coming to a head over the Smollett case, and this is probably just the straw that's breaking the camel's back in that particular situation. We have New Jersey officers who are, in a positive case, using less than the use of force standards, and other officers who are going to be investigated for their role in their excessive use of force, and as well as departments who are sanctioning them. That's it, ladies and gentlemen. I just wanted to talk about a little bit of this week. And as I'm recording this episode, it's only Thursday. I don't know what else is going on. Actually, there is one more story I wanted to talk about. So we understand that there was another shooting in Colorado, and I think it's very, very, very interesting how different parts of the country view these different things. The state of Texas, I'm assuming as a result of this shooting that occurred again in Colorado, the state of Texas wants to put more armed school personnel into their schools, wants to lock down the schools, and I think this is ridiculous. I'm in my mid-40s. When I was going to school, the biggest thing we had to worry about was the school burning down, so therefore we had fire drills. I know that in the 40s and 50s, they were practicing getting under the table, duck and cover drills in the schools because of a nuclear attack from Russia. So now we've gone from nuclear attack drills to fire drills to school lockdown drills, and now we want to continue to make our schools prisons because we don't want to do anything about this gun legislation. To me, it makes no sense. Meanwhile, the state of Washington wants to broaden their restrictions, continue to clamp down on their restrictions, clamp down on their on who can get a gun. They want to tighten up any type of restrictions, those who are seeking guns and permits and things like that. So the reaction to this is very, very interesting. So I'm sure, once again, as I said, that this is only Thursday as I'm recording this episode. I try to drop the episodes on Sunday and Monday. There may be some more stories I have to add to this, but I think it's very, very interesting how this country is going and what's going on with this. So that's it, ladies and gentlemen. Pretty short episode today. I will see you guys very soon. Continue to support your local police. Shout out to those who are serving right now and who have served, who are retired, such as myself. And our thoughts and memories are with those who have given their lives for the military, for law enforcement, and corrections, as this is National Corrections Officers Week. Okay, that's it, ladies and gentlemen. Until next time, take care. Bye.